Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Hello, this is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, August 11th. This is not Buster only. This is Dave Schoenfeld filling in from my home studio deep in the woods of Connecticut. Producing from his home in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. Taylor, good morning. How are you doing today?
Hey, Dave. Doing well. So you're also a Connecticut guy. Whereabouts in Connecticut?
I'm in Burlington. So I'm outside, about 10 miles outside the ESPN campus. A lot of bears, a few other creatures. We've had some deer this year. I spent all day yesterday picking up the remnants of last week's storm because I have too many trees on my property. So sometimes it's not so much fun living in the woods.
Yeah, last time we spoke to you, you had to drive to the CVS to get cell phone service. So good to hear you over Skype and in a better spot, and hopefully that yard is cleaned up. Hopefully it's a Buster approved clean up there.
Yeah. Look, picking up branches is a lot easier than milking cows, so I won't complain too much. So later on, we'll be talking with June Lee and Brad Doolittle, two ESPN excellent baseball writers. But first, let's get into the news. Baseball contemplating a playoff bubble. We'll get into that with June. We'll see how feasible of an idea that is. It's obviously worked well so far in the NBA. Mike Clevinger, this sounds familiar. He's going to miss a start after he was caught apparently hanging out with Zach Plesac the other night. Marcus Stroman of the Mets, he's opted out for the rest of the season. He's been injured, so I wasn't sure if he was going to come back or not. Speaking of the Mets, Taylor, they got hammered last night by the Nationals. Steven Matz does not look good. They're in trouble, aren't they? I don't know if they're going to even make the 18 playoffs.
No, they look like they're dead in the water. And to a struggling Nationals team, too, that really needed a confidence boost, especially on the offensive side of things. So it's definitely looking dicey for the Mets. Not surprising, but if there was ever a year to just kind of blow it and move on, this is the year to do it. So not the worst thing, Mets fans. Hopefully you'll have an influx of cash coming soon with that new owner.
Did you see that home run Juan Soto hit?
Oh, my gosh.
I think the longest of his career, over the apple in center field at Citi Field. But he took a high inside fastball from Matz and turned on it. I don't know how he hit that pitch. He's back. Good to have him back. He's phenomenal.
It's a funny quote I saw on Twitter from Jesse Daugherty, who covers the Nats for the Washington Post. He said Juan Soto was asked if he ever surprises himself with how far his home runs go. He said, not at all.
He is not lacking for confidence. That's for sure. Update on the Ramon Laureano incident. As he told Jeff Passan, apparently Alex Cintron said something about his mother. That sort of led to our little brawl on Sunday. So we're still weighing disciplinary measures from that fight. Tim and Jeff talked about that yesterday. I think Rob Manfred and Chris Young, the enforcer general for MLB, are going to come down hard, especially on Cintron, also on Laureano. So that might come down today. Elsewhere on the field, Mike Trout, he's pretty good. Two more home runs last night. The go-ahead home run in the eighth to beat the A's and snap Oakland's 9-game winning streak. What can you say, about Mike Trout that we haven't said before? Big game out west, Taylor, the Padres beat the Dodgers 2-1. Looking like a nice little race out there with the Rockies, Dodgers, and Padres. I like seeing the Padres being competitive, although Fernando Tatis, the man of the hour, did not hit a home run yesterday, but he's still off to a pretty good start. So that's the headlines today. Before we get to June and Brad, check out the latest episode of The Low Post. Zach Lowe talked to Pablo Torre. He's the new host of ESPN Daily, by the way, about Ben Simmons' injury. Plus, it's Jeff Van Gundy and Zach breaking down the Lakers' sputtering half-court offense, how the Nuggets should handle Michael Porter Jr., and they talk about the success of the Pacers. Download and subscribe to The Low Post wherever you get your podcasts.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We bring in ESPN baseball writer June Lee. June, we'll get into the Red Sox. That's a team you're very familiar with. But first, today's big report from Jeff Passan in the LA Times. MLB discussing a postseason bubble type format. Obviously, we've seen this work very well so far in the NHL and the NBA, the WNBA. How realistic do you think this is for baseball? You'd obviously have to have a hub like Southern California or Chicago or New York where you can use a couple different stadiums. Do you think we'll get to this point?
I think we are going to get – like I don't think if you have talked to me like 2 weeks ago whether or not we would get through the season, I would have been sure. But I feel like given the fact that we've kind of rolled through the outbreaks on both the Marlins and the Cardinals and we're kind of going full steam ahead at this point – it kind of feels like that this the bubble at least feels like it doesn't surprise me at all that MLB is heavily considering this at all at this point, given that everything that's kind of gone on in this country since the start of the season. And just given the success of the bubbles for the NHL and the NBA at this point, there are obviously multiple places where I think this is a pretty realistic scenario. The report from Jeff and the LA Times mentions, obviously, you mentioned before, Southern California, Chicago, New York. I think that this is a situation where it would make a lot of sense and I think would be pretty prudent for MLB to kind of figure out how to make this work.
Yeah, obviously, once we get to the playoffs, and remember, we'll start with 16 teams. That's why you would need two cities because you got eight series going on in that best of three first round. Look, these discussions, they're very early in the nature, you know, very preliminary, no guarantee. I like the idea. To me, the obvious choice would be Los Angeles, just because of the weather. If need be, you could even use San Diego maybe as a third city. Do you have a preference if it's L.A., Chicago, or New York, or somewhere else?
Yeah, I think L.A. probably makes the most sense, just given the weather situation there. And, you know, I think a factor that kind of we have to consider in all of this is that October is still we're in the middle of August right now. We're still 2 months away. We have no idea what the country is going to look like at that point. There's so many things that can happen between now and then. We've already seen players break protocol. We saw what happened with Zach Plesac and Mike Clevenger this week with the Cleveland Indians. It's going to be dependent on players, teams, coaches, you know, continuing to generally not catch the virus. Obviously, we've seen the outbreaks in with Miami and St. Louis. But, you know, for me, it's you kind of have to take all of this kind of day by day still because this is obviously such an unprecedented situation. You know, we've seen players continue to opt out. We've seen players like Nick Markakis opt in after opting out. We really don't know what this country slash baseball is going to look like 2 months down the road. So, you know, I continue to be cautiously optimistic that we'll get to a postseason, but you know, truly, I don't think any of us really know what the country or the sport is going to look like down the road at that point.
Yeah, no doubt. And of course, Southern California is still a relative hotbed for the coronavirus, so maybe LA isn't the best scenario there. Speaking of Mike Clevenger, I feel like we're repeating Monday's news with Zach Plesac, but he was apparently hanging out with Zach Plesac outside the hotel on Saturday night. So he violated protocol. The Indians are forcing him to quarantine. He's going to miss a start. I guess this is just a message. The Indians are taking this very, very seriously, as they should.
Yeah, and I feel like this should be a message to just all baseball players across the country to not kind of mess around with this situation. I do think it's kind of funny if you could take some sort of silver lining from all of this, as Zach Plesac had to drive a rental car back home while Mike Clevenger got to take the team plane. It's just such a weird situation. I think it just speaks to the absurdity of, you know, baseball players, you know, I think all of us as people are so used to just being able to go out and do what we want. So, yeah, I mean, I think this also speaks to just how all of us are connected in all of this, right? Even one person breaking out can have such a large effect on the rest of the club. As we've seen that in Miami and St. Louis. And again, you know, we're having this conversation again. It does feel like Groundhog Day a little bit. You know, we're having similar storylines. We're all worried about whether or not the virus is going to break out. We're all worried about whether or not baseball is going to continue. And this is just another kind of chapter in all of that on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I mean, that was always the concern. I mean, let's be honest here. These are young men, even professional baseball players like to do stuff after a baseball game. You're young. Yeah. You talk to any players on just how difficult it is for these single young guys to remain stuck either at home or in a hotel room for several days at a time.
Well, I think kind of it stretches across the you kind of see a wide range of reactions, right? There's people who are very, very disciplined and are going to kind of keep to the schedule and kind of understand the scope of what one positive within the clubhouse can mean. And there are other people who are going to be laxer about it. I think that kind of speaks to the state of our country right now to a certain degree. There's people who are taking various degrees of seriousness in all of this. But at the end of the day, you know, again, one person getting infected is going to have a massive effect. And we see that if you just look at the standings right now, whether it's the NL East, the NL Central, they all look bizarre because of so many games being canceled and postponed. I mean, yesterday was the 15th straight day, I think it was, for a game to not happen. And just given the uneven nature of the number of games that, you know, the Marlins are in first place right now and they've played 10 games while the rest of their, you know, there are a lot of, you know, the Braves have played 18 games. The Cardinals have played 16 games while, you know, the Cardinals have played 5 games while other teams in the divisions have played 16 games. Like, that just speaks to the absurdity of the season so far. And I'm very curious to see what these final game totals are going to look like at the end of the season. You know, Rob Manfred has spoken about wanting to get to as close to 60 games as possible, but it's going to require a lot of teams playing a lot of games and a lot of doubleheaders in the final days of the season without any break. And so I'm curious to see whether or not that has an effect on injuries. You know, we've already seen an uptick in pitcher injuries this season. And so there's so many weird things going on already with this year. And it's only going to continue as we kind of see probably just the number of games that are going to need to be made up. And, you know, there's just the overlooming threat of having another outbreak happen over the course of this season.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. The Cardinals, their doubleheader Thursday against the Tigers was postponed. So, yeah, they're in big trouble. I mean, they're going to go 2 weeks between games, assuming they do end up finally playing Friday. There's just no way they're going to get 60 games in. I don't know if physically it can happen, even with a bunch of added doubleheaders. So they're a mess. I know Jeff and Tim talked about them a little bit yesterday, so we don't get into them again other than we agree. The Cardinals, the schedule's a mess. I can see it now in typical Cardinals fashion. They go like 8-8, sneak into the playoffs, and then win the World Series. Kind of like back in 06 when they won the World Series. I think they only won 82 games that year. Mike Trout, 2 home runs last night, including the game winner in the 8th inning. So here's my question, June. Over the next, let's just say, 7 years, who would you rather have, Mike Trout or Fernando Tatis Jr.?
Oh, man, that's such a good question. Well, I think the thing with Trout is that we forget his age all the time. Like, Mike Trout has been a part of our baseball consciousness and our lives since he came up in 2011. And we forget how young he was. He was 20 years old. You know, Mike Trout is still 29 years old. He still has a lot left in the tank here. You know, Fernando Tatis has obviously been incredible over the course of the season so far. For me, I probably take Trout just given the consistency that we've seen, his health track record, and the fact that he is still only 29 years old. The fact that he's not even 30 yet, I think, is so absurd, just given his track record of success and the fact that if he retired today, he's definitely a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it's insane. I think I'm with you. Slight edge to Trout. Look, superstar players age differently than regular players. So Mike Trout's going to age well. He's still an on-base machine. That bodes well for him maintaining that productivity into his 30s. But Tatis, man, he's incredible. I want to get into the Red Sox a little bit with you. That's kind of a team you cover in depth. Last night, another ugly loss. They went with the closer. They used, I don't know, 6 or 7 different pitchers. They gave up 16 hits, 8 walks. They blew a lead. They lost to the Rays. We're still a few weeks from the trade deadline, but is it possible they blow this team up even more at the deadline, June?
I think there's a decent chance at that. I mean, just given – if you look at the state of the league, right, and you look at the state of the division, the Red Sox are 6-10. This is a 60-game season. There's not a lot of time to kind of make up that ground. And I think that just – if you look at the pitching rotation, right, Ryan Weber came into the season as the number 3 starter for the Red Sox, and he got set down a couple days ago. The Red Sox are kind of piecing together, if you could say it that way, some sort of pitching rotation – has been working out very great, and they do have pieces that I think would be attractive to other teams. Kevin Pillar has been pretty good since coming over and signing with the Red Sox on a minor league deal this offseason. Jackie Bradley Jr. is a free agent after this season, is obviously an incredible defensive center fielder. I'm curious to see if there's any interest in J.D. Martinez. He has the option to opt out after this year, also the option to opt out after the 2021 season, and I believe maybe the 2022 season. But J.D. is obviously a designated hitter, and both leagues have designated hitters this year. I'm curious to see if there's an NL team, potentially, who's interested in him for a stretch run if they're close to a postseason and they need a big bat. He's kind of been struggling this year. He's talked about how not having video has affected his performance at the plate. And so we'll see if he bounces back. But the Red Sox do have several pieces I think would be interesting for a team kind of going on a stretch run for the playoffs. And, you know, I'm not sure that the Red Sox expected to necessarily contend at a high level, given the fact that Chris Sale underwent Tommy John surgery before the season and obviously training Mookie Betts. I think a lot of fans kind of viewed this as a transition year, but the Red Sox are currently sitting in last place in the division with the Baltimore Orioles. And so there's a lot of things to consider, especially given the fact that we are in a short season.
Yeah, I mean, Martinez hit his first home run last night. Pillar, Bradley, they're free agents after the year, so they're trade bait. I'm working on a story on the trade deadline, and there's not going to be a lot out there. That's why I think guys like Bradley and Pillar, who are good defensive outfielders, have value. So, yeah, it wouldn't shock me. Real quick, I mean, is Red Sox Nation – would they rather see the Red Sox make that number 8 seed, or would they rather just tank and get as high a pick as possible in the draft?
I think there's a level of defeat within the Red Sox this year. And honestly, like given the state of baseball right now and the state of the season, this is the best possible year in the grand. If you take a big picture view, this is probably the best possible year to have some sort of transition year. You're seeing, you know, Red Sox fans are starting to get excited about Alex Verdugo and the performance that he's put up over the course of last week. He had a 2-homer game and robbed a homer last week and really kind of revved up a lot of Red Sox fans kind of about his future potentially. But, you know, I think the Red Sox are at a point where I think people are already extremely dejected following the trade of Mookie Betts. You know, I still have friends who are Red Sox fans text me about how angry they are about Mookie getting traded. And Chris Sale obviously went down, and Chris, yep. You know, I don't think it's possible for the Red Sox to be a championship contender without Chris Sale, who is, when he's healthy and at his best, one of the best pitchers in baseball. And so I think it's kind of at the point where Red Sox fans are a little bit defeated, and it's kind of a, you know, you kind of get what you can take at this point. And it might be the best for the future for the Red Sox to kind of pack up this season, kind of see what they can get at the trade deadline and build out that farm system that Chaim Bloom was brought in to kind of curate and build back up after Dave Dombrowski traded away so many people and obviously brought the Red Sox a World Series, but have kind of decimated the near-term future of the Red Sox. And so I think there's just a level of defeat around this team to a certain degree.
Yeah, I hear you, especially with Eduardo Rodriguez also out for the year. All right, June.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot. Everybody, you can check out his work at ESPN.com. June, anything you want to plug before you take off?
Nothing specifically baseball related. I do have a basketball story coming up next week, so that'll be interesting.
Wow, Mr. Versatile. All right, well, I look forward to that. Thanks, June.
Thanks, David.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes.
The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're here with Brad Doolittle, ESPN senior baseball writer. Brad. Finally, the Blue Jays will play a home game tonight against the Marlins, I believe it is, at 6:30 Eastern time. But as we all know, that game is not in Toronto. It's in Buffalo. You have a story up today. First Major League Baseball game in Buffalo since October 7th, 1885. Of course, that depends on how you account for the Federal League, which existed back in 1914 and 1915. How excited is the city, and how is this going to go for the Blue Jays?
Well, yeah, I'm speaking from Chicago, so it's hard for me to talk for the people in Buffalo. But I have to think that the reaction is kind of one of it's a curiosity more than anything. You know, I would think that the Blue Jays are probably the most popular major league team in Buffalo. Not only are the Bisons the AAA affiliate for Toronto, but yeah, Buffalo is only, I believe, 62 miles away from Toronto. I actually should probably give that in kilometers if I'm going to be totally accurate. But, you know, I imagine it's a curiosity. I do think there are some, it looks like there's some buildings across from Salen Field in which you can see inside the stadium. So I am kind of curious to see if we get some shots of people watching from across the street and just how much interest there was there. The mayor of Buffalo seemed very enthusiastic about having the Jays in town. So, you know, it's not really what we wanted from this season to have a team having to call a city home that is not their home. But, you know, it's an interesting thing. And it's a cool outcome to have Major League Baseball back in Buffalo for the first time since the 19th century.
Yeah, it'd be a lot different, obviously, if fans could actually attend the game, and they've done a great job supporting the AAA team there for years. Yeah, so take me back to 1885. What were they? The Buffalo Bisons. They were in the National League. How long were they in the National League back then? Remember, people don't realize Buffalo was once, you know, a thriving, large city. In fact, as recently as 1950, population was 580,000. It was the 15th biggest city in the country. Now the population of the city itself is only about 250. Metro area, of course, is larger. But I assume back in the 19th century, Buffalo was still one of the larger cities in the country.
Yeah. During the time that the original incarnation of the Major League Bisons were there, Buffalo, depends on where you look, but it was around the 12th or 13th largest city in the nation. And actually, after they returned to the minor leagues, by the time the American League was born, Buffalo was the eighth largest city in the nation. And of course, Buffalo was supposed to be an original member of the American League. And then sort of just a couple of months before the AL debuted as a major league, Ben Johnson, through some machinations, ended up finding an investor out of Boston, and they ended up starting the season in Boston at Huntington Grounds, and are the team we now know as the Boston Red Sox. And, you know, who's to say what would have happened historically if he had picked a different team to go there? Buffalo, as you said, was a pretty thriving city up until the mid-20th century. So it's certainly possible that we could be looking back right now and, you know, maybe Ted Williams would have played in Buffalo. We don't know. Everything could have been different.
the Blue Jays themselves, you know, they're off to a slow start. You know, they're 5-8. They're not scoring any runs. They're a young team, so maybe this won't affect them at all. Does it have any impact on them? You know, their home away from home, is it a good thing just to have a base of stability, or does it not matter?
I would think that it matters. I mean, I just think there would have to be a cumulative effect, especially in this season where you go out on the road and you're not allowed to really, you know, stretch out and relax in a place that you can call your own. You know, you're in a hotel room, then you go to another city and you're in another hotel room. And, you know, as the Indians have demonstrated for the rest of the major leagues, you're not supposed to leave that hotel room or go outside the immediate ground. So having to do that, bouncing from one city to the next for 2 months, I think would have, you know, a negative effect. I know it would depress me, and I don't even really like to go outside that much. But, you know, I do think that having a familiarity with that venue, especially for some of the Jays younger hitters who played in AAA in Buffalo, I think that'll help relax them. It is apparently generally plays as kind of a pitcher's park, and the Jays hitters that have gotten off to a slow start, among which are Vladimir Guerrero Jr., that's maybe not a great thing, but then again, Vladdy Jr. hit over 400 when he played in Buffalo. So we'll see. You know, it's a team with a lot of young talent, and in a season like this, if playing at an actual home base gets them going, then they can jump right back in this. You know, right now it looks like if you can get to 500, you're probably going to be in the AL playoffs.
Yeah, Vladdy Jr. hitting 240, just one home run. Bo Bichette, who was so impressive last year, 289, two home runs, only one walk. That's a little concern for us OBP lovers. Kevin Biggio, 192. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, 13 games or whatever. You know, it doesn't mean a whole lot. But Vlad Jr. in particular, I don't know. I don't want to say he's overhyped because his minor league stats were so off the charts. You know, and it's hard to compare him to guys like Ronald Acuna Jr. and Fernando Tatis, who are also young but so good. Are we just expecting too much from him at 21 years old?
Well, you know, I think he's the kind of guy who is going to take a little time just because, you know, he hits the ball hard, and that's always a great starting point. And he's got an advanced approach at the plate. But the problem is, he's one of these guys that if he tends to roll over on the ball and he hits the ball on the ground too much for the way that major league teams defend such players these days and the way they pitch such players. So he's got to make that adjustment to getting the ball in the air more often. And the Jays have worked with him. And, you know, who knows if we wouldn't have had that long layoff. Maybe he would have been able to carry some of the work that he had done in spring training into the season, and maybe now he's still getting back up to that. I don't worry about him, you know, in the long term. You know, he doesn't have a great defensive game. You know, he's awful young to already be pushed across the diamond to first base. So hopefully, you know, he'll be able to make up lost value just from positional calculations by hitting better with from that spot. But you know, the other part of it is we just see so many of these super hyped young guys like Fernando Tatis Jr. and Juan Soto basically hitting the ground running when they hit the major leagues. And based on what he did in the minors, we thought Vlad Jr. would be one of those guys. And, you know, we've seen glimpses of it, but we just haven't seen him put it together for an extended period of time yet.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. Yeah, like you said, I'm worried about the high ground ball rate and his ability to tap into that big power we saw at the home run derby. Speaking of Tatis, he's obviously off to a great start. I asked June this question. I want your take on it as well. Who would you rather have over, say, the next 7 years, Fernando Tatis or Mike Trout?
you know, I probably would still stick with Mike Trout. I think Mike Trout is one of the 10 best players who's ever played Major League Baseball. And what I love about the way his career is going is even as he's starting to slow down in terms of foot speed, just a tiny bit, you know, he's just continues to get better and better in terms of the home run ball. I mean, he still has the full arsenal of skills, but even when his athleticism is gone, if it ever completely leaves him, he's going to be one of the best take and rake hitters in baseball. And, you know, that's going to last him as long as he wants to keep playing. And so even now with all of the great, very young players that we have in the majors, I still don't know that there's a guy that I would rather have to begin a franchise with than Mike Trout over the next 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's a really good point about his power, because that's the skill that ages well. There's been a lot of guys who hit a lot of home runs in their 30s, so that's going to keep Trout at the top of the of his game. You know, is it ridiculous to even bring up Tatis in comparison to one of the best players of all time? But I'm looking at some of Tatis's StatCast metrics early on. Again, it's a small sample size, but hard hit rate, 100th percentile. Average exit velocity, 100th percentile. His barrel percentage, 99th percentile. But here's the amazing thing. Top sprint speed, 97th percentile. So this guy hits the ball as hard as anybody in baseball and runs almost as fast as everybody else in baseball. He is just simply incredible when it comes to his baseball skills and his baseball athleticism.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. And, you know, on top of all that, he's got a great arm. He's got exceptional range. Last year, consistency on defense was a bit of an issue. But I think so far, from what I've seen this year, he's even gotten better in that regard. I mean, he's the full package. There's no doubt about it. And he plays with a lot of flair. He's, you know, he's going to be one of the most popular and exciting players in baseball for a long time. But he's still only 21 years old. He's still only in his second big league season. And, you know, I'm slow to hand the mantle of best of from one guy to the next. And Mike Trout's been doing it for a decade, and he hasn't shown one iota of slippage so far. So if the bar is Mike Trout, that's awfully high one to clear. But, man, yeah, Tatis is fun to watch.
Yeah, he's exciting. We'll get into this a little later. We have a Bleacher tweet on, you know, whether the Padres – could sign Tatis to a long-term deal, kind of like the Braves did with Ronald Acuna. Tatis isn't going to settle for $100 million like Acuna did. Is it feasible? Do you think that the Padres could even afford to sign Tatis, whether or not he's willing to buy out some of his years of free agency down the road?
You know, I would say it like this. If he's amenable to doing that, then they better get it done, because if the excuse is that they don't want to overcommit in terms of long-term financial investment, well, you know, right now, some of that long-term money that's tied up is in Eric Hosmer and Manny Machado, who's, you know, a superstar. But if they feel like they don't have the long-term budget to lock in Fernando Tatis, I can't see that sitting well with the San Diego fan base. So, you know, whoever they had in mind to extend long-term, I don't even have those conversations until I've had that conversation with Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah. Hey, Eric Hosmer has remade his swing, Brad. He's hitting the ball in the air. He had the little stomach ailment. He came back last night. Hey, if Eric Hosmer, who's always hit the ball hard, he's getting the ball in the air now. If Manny Machado bounces back, they now have some on-base ability with Tommy Pham and Trent Grisham, who's looked good early on. Man, that could be suddenly a really good offense for a team that's had a really bad offense for a long time.
Yeah, it's a lineup that doesn't have a lot of holes. You know, they've gotten some really interesting early contributions from Jake Cronenworth, who filled in for Hosmer when Hosmer was injured. You know, they've made a lot of good decisions there. Tommy Pham is really a dynamic and underrated player. And, I think that was a huge pickup. He's really intense. And, you know, when you have a locker room that is, where your highest paid player is Eric Hosmer, who he is sort of a natural leader. That's the role he filled in Kansas City when the Royals were at their best in the last decade. And you have Manny Machado, who's a great player, but has more of a laid back personality. Tommy Pham is the kind of guy that really gives that team edge. And, you know, I really love that lineup. And when you look at what the Padres have done so far, you know, they've been very competitive. They're three games over 500 is a postseason track for sure in this season. And the weak point of the club so far has probably been the bullpen. Kirby Yates has been a little uneven so far, but that's a strength. The Padres in the end should have one of the better bullpens in baseball. And so if the bullpen can get on track, you know, I don't think that they will edge the Dodgers for the division crown, but I think the Padres could enter the postseason not only with a strong record, but as you know, with that bullpen, with the superstar type of leadership of Machado and Tatis, they could be a tough team to face when we get into October.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And then maybe the bullpen started that turnaround last night. They used a bullpen game, six different pitchers to beat the Dodgers 2-1. Drew Pomerantz got the save. That's his third. I think Kirby Yates got one the other day. So it's not like Pomerantz is the closer every day. But yeah, it's a deep bullpen. Plus, nice 1-2 punch with Chris Paddock, Danielson Lamet, who had the no-hit bid the other day. We might see Mackenzie Gore up in that rotation at some point. Yeah, they're really fun. I know you love the White Sox, but I give the Padres as kind of maybe that team that finished under 500 last year and could maybe surprise and go deep into the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that based on what we've seen so far. I mean, I think I'm still very high on the White Sox, but they're pitching, which was always going to be the question mark for them. I thought there was some potential there, but it's not coming together so far the way that I would have liked to have seen, particular with the bullpen. You know, you need at least five or six dependable relievers in a season like this. And, you know, their best reliever is Aaron Bummer, who's developed into one of those sort of rubber arm guys that can go four or five outs for you on a regular basis. And he's injured right now. And I think they're just scrambling to get outs. If, you know, I think if the White Sox can stay around 500 for a couple of weeks until they can get some of this shored up, they'll be in good shape. But yeah, right now, if I was going to pick one of the non-playoff teams last year to really emerge as the breakout team this year, probably would rate the Padres ahead of the White Sox at this point.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Listeners, make sure you check out Brad's excellent piece on what happened the last time Buffalo hosted a big league baseball game 135 years ago. Thanks, Brad.
Anytime, Dave.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Dave. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. Coming in, first one up, Brian Simpson at bsimp120274 writes in, do you think my Padres could sign Tatis to a long-term contract similar to Bregman, Altuve, or Acuna Jr., or is Tatis going to take more of a Lindor route?
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit with Brad a moment ago. You know, I know there's been various reports going back to offseason about discussions, you know, between the Padres and Tatis. I think the key here, like we mentioned, Acuna left a lot of money on the table. He signed an 8-year, $100 million contract plus two team option years. There's no way Tatis is going to come close to that, especially with his start he's had this year. So if there's any hope here for the Padres, you're looking at $150 million and probably higher. So you got to factor that in. You know, it's a small market franchise, and you're already paying Manny Machado that huge contract. That's a little bit of a financial concern. Well, let's see it play out. I hope they sign him. You always want the homegrown guy to stay with his team. By the way, Taylor, the White Sox had Fernando Tatis Jr. and traded him for James Shields. How do you think they look at Tatis right now?
Oh, no. That's a tough one to swallow. Yikes.
Sorry, White Sox fans.
Next up, P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg writes in, if you were a young player, who would you call for hitting advice? Joey Votto, Freddie Freeman, or someone else?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, look, nobody can talk hitting like Joey Votto. Of course, what we don't know is how well he can translate his approach and mindset to other hitters. The thing that makes him hard to duplicate is he never swings at a pitch off the plate. And I don't know if you can really teach that. That's almost just something you have. Freddie Freeman, I love his approach because he's a home run hitter, but he's also sprays the ball all over the field. He's not just trying to yank everything over the fence. You can't go wrong with either guy. Anybody you think of in this regard, Taylor?
No, I'm a baseball novice, honestly, David. So I great answer there. Let's move on. Last one for today. Eric Sorensen at Coach Sorensen 9 writes in, "Hey, Buster," or whoever is in charge while Buster is vacationing, "with this Mariners rebuild and any rebuild, how soon is too soon to be bringing up prospects? Will we see Kalenic this year?"
So this is a good question because I'm a Mariners fan and I pay a lot of attention to them for some reason. So Jared Kelenic, one of the top prospects in baseball, you know, a top 10 kind of outfielder. Mariners fans want him up for obvious reasons. They want to see how good he is. Here's the deal. He only has 92 plate appearances above Class A ball. So that's, you don't want to rush him to the major leagues, although he apparently crushed it during the summer training camp. He's still apparently crushing it as they're playing intra-squad games at the alternate training site. Look, even if you rush him, Taylor, he's better than some of the guys they have. Malik Smith is struggling. D. Gordon's playing some outfield. Those guys, they can't hit. They don't have any power. But here's the deal. If you call him up now, you have him under team control until 2026, through 2026. If you wait until early next season, meaning you hold him in the minors for 10 days and then call him up, you have him under team control through 2027. So given that the Mariners are going nowhere this year, they're not a good team, I don't think they're going to call him up. And I don't like it because I think he's one of their 25 best players. I don't think he'd embarrass himself. He might even be ready to be a star off the bat. But my prediction, Jared Kelenic comes up in 2021.
Good stuff. And Eric Sorensen, you couldn't have asked a better question for today. So
was that in depth enough for Eric? I hope so.
I think he'll enjoy that. So if you haven't already, fine listeners, please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And David will be back on Thursday. Tomorrow, it is Timmy time once again.
That's all for today. My thanks to June, Brad, and of course, our great producer, Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.